Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of the Seabros Fishing Podcast. Just want to kick off today's show with a few announcements. First is we apologize for the delay in content over the last week or so. Both of our boats went in the water, getting things clean, prepped, ready to go for the 2020 season. So we haven't had a whole lot of time to record some fresh episodes. So stick with us. We have a lot of good stuff coming out. I think you're going to really enjoy this episode of the show and the guest that we have on today, who I'll introduce in a few minutes. But we just wanted to get that out there. Sorry for the delays, but we'll keep moving ahead and we're looking forward to sitting down with some awesome new guests and implementing some fishing reports as we move into the season a little bit further. Taylor and I will be releasing a spring fishing report here this week, so stay tuned for that. One other update that we just received news on is we will be allowed to take for hire charter trips beginning Monday, May 25th. We're being asked to implement some of the same mitigation strategies that all of you are undertaking in your day-to-day lives on our boats, social distancing, wearing the proper personal protective equipment, hand sanitizer, hand washing, those sorts of things. So we're prepared to do that. We have a great protocol in place aboard our boats, so we're really looking forward to getting back out there with clients starting next week. So the fishing's been great, and we can't wait to enjoy it with some of you all. So if you're interested in booking a trip, please don't hesitate to visit the Mass Bay Guides website, www.massbayguides.com. You can check out the rates and trip options there, and you can call the office 781-545-6516 to get a date or a couple dates on the books. We are booking up quickly. We have some prime dates still available going into June, July, and August. But if you want to capitalize on those, please make sure that you call soon and get that squared away. One other thing that we want to mention is we have made some cool new face shields and buffs and put them up on the Seabros Fishing website. They're that tuna mark design, except they're in a wolf pack cluster. They're pretty cool. We've sold out already on the first order. We expect the new order to be in this week. So if you're looking at getting some new gear, apparel, or just keeping yourself and others protected throughout this fishing season, the charter season, definitely check those out on the SeabrosFishing.com website. They're right on the front page. You can order there. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Mass Bay Guides. Mass Bay Guides is our family-run charter fishing fleet that's based out of Scituate, Massachusetts. We've been providing anglers with the ultimate fishing adventure for over 20 years. Whether you're looking to put together a multi-boat corporate fishing trip, a trip for your family, or you're an avid angler looking to catch a giant bluefin tuna, our crew will do anything it takes to make sure you and your friends and your family have a great day on the water. To book a trip with us, please visit the Mass Bay Guides website, www.massbayguides.com. You can search prices, trip information, and get the latest reports and links to our social media pages there. You can also find us directly on Facebook and Instagram and just search Mass Bay Guides. Our guest on today's show is a great friend of ours. He's a Massachusetts native, and he has over 20 years experience in the offshore fishing industry. He's logged hundreds of trips to the Northeast Canyons and has been fortunate enough to travel the world as a full-time captain and mate aboard some of the most reputable sport fishing boats and programs. He's fished in locations such as Costa Rica, the Bahamas, Prince Edward Island, Florida, and Mexico. He's been featured as a guest speaker at many fishing seminars throughout the Northeast, and he's written a lot of articles for publications such as In the Bite magazine, The Big Game Journal, and On the Water. He's currently the captain of a 66-foot Viking, El Diablo, and spends his seasons based out of Nantucket, Massachusetts, and Miami, Florida. Please welcome to the podcast, Captain John Galvin. Welcome to the Seabros Fishing Podcast.
God
right,
dude. What are you doing?
Don't publish that line. Yeah,
we'll clip that one out of there.
Oh, dude,
you should have saw how much I had to cut out when my old man did this with us.
It was. You probably have some anything to do with me. You never know when when I might go off in the wrong direction.
Dude, it's good to see you.
I know.
Likewise. Look forward to seeing you guys more this summer once I get back up there.
I think the last time I saw you, you were backing. I think you were on Blondie backing out of Nantucket last year when you were there for the big game battle hanging out.
Yeah, we were there on the owner's family vacation.
Yeah, yeah. When was the last time you saw John?
I don't know. We were, it was about 3 o'clock in the morning, and I was just about asleep, and he came in yelling we had a Wahoo on.
Oh, that's right. On the trip down. I was off the coast of Georgia.
Yeah.
They had pre-sunrise twilight Wahoo bite.
With about 18 pounds of weeds on our Wahoo lure.
Yeah, that already had about 64 pounds of lead, and the lure itself probably weighed about a pound. You did a great job, though. Hey, wake up. Reel that in.
Yeah. Where, you guys, like, we got a fish on. He's like, I honestly don't know. It could just be weeds.
Mike, it's a 50-50 shot. Either way, the lines need to come in, and I don't feel like reeling it. Or actually, it was like, somebody needs to drive. We can't ghost ride a 76-foot boat in the dark.
What are we talking about?
I remember getting pictures from you guys on that trip, like snuggled up in sleeping bags right as you left the Cape.
Oh, yeah. That was leaving New York City.
New York.
That was the coldest.
Big Norwester.
Those were the coldest nights of my life.
Yeah, that was going across the Delaware Bay was, I think it was like, must have been 30 degrees air temp that night.
That was horrendous.
That was freezing.
Gross.
We were trading off like.
Dude, we had like hot blankets going, like literally like.
We'd trade blankets as we traded watch ships. It was cold.
Oh, God, that's amazing.
Yep.
So, how's liveaboard quarantine been for you?
It's been good. Been fishing a ton the last 10 days or so.
Yeah,
you suck.
The blackfin bite's been really good. We got a nice little cobia the other day, about 25 pounds. That was a nice surprise on the kite bait. Some good bottom fishing, too. Our down rod has produced a couple nice snappers. Big mutton had a real nice American red snapper the other day, which is a cool surprise. Blackfins have been real chunky, all 25 to 35 pounds.
Damn.
Those are stud black fins.
That's sick. Yeah.
Tasty little things,
dude,
too.
I think those things are up
dude,
there
they
with
fight
the elephant.
Hard.
Or even from a taste perspective, like, I like them a lot. Especially
I like them, too.
Well, especially if you treat them like we treat our tunas up here, you know? And aren't
if
just
you bleed
like,
it and ice it, it's good.
Oh, right? Yeah.
It's kind of like a yellowfin light.
Yeah, exactly. Yellowfin light.
But they fight. I mean, they almost look like little dwarf big eyes, like pygmy big eyes.
They fight like them too. They fight hard.
They some of them get some moxie. You know, we're catching them on the 20-pound sailfish gear, so it's the tackle's well paired for them.
That's sick. We've done a bit of it with Jason over there on the Gulf side, and it's so much fun. I love it.
Chasing the shrimp boats?
No, actually, just fishing the wrecks and stuff. Just like live chumming around the wrecks. I know he does get on the shrimp boats here and there, but. Primarily just kind of hopping wreck to wreck.
That's kind of similar how I've been fishing. There's a lot of county wrecks off Miami here, and we've just kind of been posted up on those, right on a color change, flying the kites, you know, down rod for the bottom dwellers. And then when we mark or see the tunas, start firing out the chummers, the little pilchards. And when they've been firing off, it's been fun.
That's
you
awesome.
Know, steady action.
That's sick. So sick. Well, we want to kick this thing off just kind of asking you about what your current schedule and program is. You know, obviously COVID aside and whatever that's changing, but what's the El Diablo program all about?
All about fishing, you know, fun fishing first, you know, we'll do a little bit of competitive fishing. short term, obviously COVID and the current state of affairs in the world is alter our schedule a little bit. Should be over in the Out Islands of the Bahamas right now. We had plans to base out of Cat Island for the month of May. Obviously that did not happen.
Yeah.
But we're still, you know, we're fishing right now, and then I'll probably fish again early June before a quick yard visit. And we're still on schedule for coming up north. We had planned to come up the end of June prior to this health episode. So we'll still be coming up.
It's a great name.
We'll still be coming up the end of June. We'll be based out of Nantucket, is our home port during the summer and fall. We'll be fishing out of there, canyons, bluefin, till probably mid to end of October, depending on weather and fishing.
Yep.
And then, you know, then get back down here and get our southern season going again.
So where are you guys right now down in Florida?
Miami Beach. South
Miami
Beach.
Gotcha.
Yep. Gotcha. Miami Beach Marine is our winter home.
That's awesome.
Nice.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's been good. It's been quiet by Miami Beach standards.
Yeah.
Recently. Yeah. But it's been pretty nice. It's been enjoyable. Normally, you know, March through, you know, kind of into May, it's a pretty active place. You know, global hub and just very you know, Miami's legendary for its club and bar scene and beach scene.
Oh yeah.
So definitely it's a shell of its notoriety right now.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm sure it's crazy, crazy different down there. So
I'm not complaining though. The quiet, the tone down, I guess it's almost like a sober Miami.
Yeah.
It's a
sober Miami.
Sober Miami.
Been pretty enjoyable.
That's an awesome analogy.
So but the weather's been great overall, so I can't complain. Other than a couple, like today's stormy. For the most part, this spring the weather has been incredible.
Yeah, I've heard that. Frank Pitten was just down. I don't know where he was. He was down.
Actually, Ed LaValle was just down here too.
Oh yeah,
he was out on a charter with a couple friends of mine. Him and Tina were out. My buddy Freddie was. They were out with Dean Panos on the Double D.
Yep.
And my friend Freddie David was on board with him. And I remember getting a text. He's like, "Do you know an Ed LaValle?"
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Random question. Where's this going? They fished in some pretty shitty conditions, as, you know, New Englanders tend to enjoy doing.
Yeah.
And they ended up tonguing on the black fans. I think they got a couple. They got cobia. They got a sailfish or two as well.
That's sick. That's sick. You actually just kind of launched me into a little question I was going to ask you anyway. So you've been in the, you know, running private boats, sport boats now for a while. I mean, we've known each other since you were, you know, running charters up here and spending most of your time up here. So being a Northeast New England based, you know, full-time sport fish captain now, you know, in that circuit, how do you feel that kind of set you up for, you know, that industry versus, you know, maybe a guy that grew up in Florida doing it or whatever else? I mean, you just said, obviously we're used to fishing in shit weather, but.
And they fish in shit weather too down here, you know.
Yeah.
In the wintertime, it's northeasterlies, your predominant wind, especially for the sailfish crowd. And they, I mean, you can just look back at this season alone.
Yeah.
I mean, they fish in like gale force conditions, flying kites. I mean, they're not afraid to fish in rough waters. Nah. You know, it's a little different when the water is like 75 degrees versus like 45 or 55 degrees.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more tolerable. obviously the runs aren't as far, but it's still pretty nasty. Especially when you get the northerlies and northeasterlies blowing against the Gulf Stream. It gets pretty nasty down here. They're definitely a harder group of guys. I mean, there's some phenomenal fishermen come out of Florida, and I don't think it really matters where you're from.
Yeah.
You know, there's certain styles of fishing that, you know, one area, you know, geographical area may have, you know, set people up to just learn and perfect at a younger age or have a shorter learning curve. But it's like anything. If you're really looking to, if you have a goal in mind to learn something or become proficient at something, you're going to learn it no matter what.
Yeah.
But they're definitely, you know, I think we're probably more inclined and comfortable running long distances in fog, night, restricted visibility. Down here, I mean, there's some really good bottom fishermen down here. I mean, the kite fishing is, they pretty much put it on the map here in the States, right, for the most part. So it's all, there's, you know, there can be an argument made for either side. In the end, if you know how to fish, you're gonna do well in either area. If you're good, you know, getting a good yachtsman, regardless of where you're from, you're gonna do all right. I mean, obviously they have basically 365 days a year to perfect
their
trade.
They got the reps in, that's for sure.
Yeah, and you know, you can easily do fly the kites before work down here, especially in like Palm Beach and Miami, where you only have to go a mile or two out.
Yeah.
You know, I had had a goal as a young kid that I wanted to run the private sport boats for a long time. And a big part of it is you gotta come down here. It is the epicenter for sport fishing, you know, on the East Coast, and for definitely for the private boats, between the builders, the boat yards, the crews, just, you know, it's a great place to be based out of. You know, you can go to so many different areas of the Caribbean and whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, what do you like better though? Like preference wise? If you had to pick one, Johnny.
One like Florida or New England to fish?
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Ooh.
I'm trying to get some controversy going here.
He's being very
You're so nice. I've been with you during some different circumstances. So I'm trying to get it out of you here, guy.
If I had to pick, I mean, I'm gonna go. There's home field advantage up north. I'm gonna go with New England.
Yeah.
Big part being the bluefins. You know, them Atlantic freight cranes are definitely, you know, one of the baddest fish on the planet. But as you guys know, I've spent a lot of my time has been spent down out in the canyons.
Yep.
And I think it's when the conditions are right, the canyons they're as good as anywhere in the world. For both amount of fish, species, quality of fish, you know, it definitely changes year to year, but you know, you're going to find, you know, pretty usually decent yellow fins. There's whites. There's always, you know, some blues to be caught, and swordfish and the big eyes. You know, I think the canyons are a pretty magical place.
I concur. So
up north gets my vote, you know, partly from being there and, you know, yeah, home field advantage.
Yeah, no,
I agree.
That's so true.
I mean, I haven't done a ton of fishing down south, but canyons are unbelievable.
Where else in the world could you technically you could go catch a blue marlin in the canyons and then stop on the way in and catch a giant bluefin,
right,
if you really wanted to?
Yep.
That's a pretty cool. There's not a lot of places in the world you can do that. You know, I think it's probably, you know, some of the East, you know, Atlanta spots, you probably have that option as well. But don't get me wrong, fishing down here is nice. I do like being warm all the time.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It's fun chasing summer.
I'm sure the streamlined trip logistics also help with that too down there. I mean, it's not like multiple days, overnights, you know, everything going into it. I'm sure it has similarities and differences, but it must be nice to go out and do a day trip and be in the blue water, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we do. Sometimes we'll do half days.
Yeah.
You know, we'll leave in the morning and we're on the rip fishing, and if we're staying nearby on a half day, we're on the rip fishing in 30 minutes from the time I pull out the slip, and you know, we can be back for lunch.
Sick.
Sometimes you can go out and fish, come in for lunch, like get lunch and, you know, at the marina restaurant bar here, and then go back out for the afternoon bite.
Awesome.
You know, there's definitely the biggest difference being, you know, for me growing up fishing off the south side of the Cape, there was always a decent run, whether it was bluefin or canyons. You know, here it's, a mile, depending on more, you're outside of going out sword fishing, going, you know, to the east, your biggest runs are whether how far you want to run south or north. Yeah. You're generally not that far off the beach.
Yeah. That makes sense. It's so awesome. I'm so jealous, dude, especially after all this that we've been going through. It's freaking sick.
This has been like the first nice day.
Dude, it has been so today. This has been the windiest spring. Like, even like our old man and like, you know, some of the salt of the earth guys around here, like, this is the windiest spring I can ever remember.
It snowed in April and May, right?
Yeah, dude, it's just, it's unreal.
It was nicer in January and February than it was in March and April.
Like, where?
Man, it's like, just want to tell Mother Nature, like, you're drunk, go home.
Yeah. No shit. Dude, we're like, everyone is so anxious to bend a rod that we're fishing in like 45 degree weather, 30 knots out of the northwest, wind against tide,
with like
to catch
4-pound
like
test.
To catch like 16 inch, you know, schoolies in the river. It's like that's where everyone's mind is at right now, which is a
but
good
if you,
thing.
If you haven't, if you're having fun fishing, it's good, and yeah. You know, it's definitely for up there, definitely a sanity
yeah.
thing at the current time.
Yeah, you get it, you get it. It's like you get to I mean, mid April, and it's like, ugh.
That's also said. I haven't seen I don't think I've seen a full winter in 14 years.
Yeah. I actually remember having that conversation with you about how much you fucking hate the cold. Probably like 10 years ago, like right when like Turbo and I got out of Maritime. I remember being drunk one night having that conversation with you. And you're like, I will not be here ever again in the winter.
It's fine to visit for a holiday, but nah, I don't like wearing shoes. I like wearing t-shirts. I really don't like wearing any sort of closed toe footwear.
Well, you don't need to wear a face mask, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, you're basically wearing a face mask.
This is like
things like a HEPA
filter. Impenetrable fortress of hair on my face.
You have a built-in N95. That's literally what it looks like.
Oh yeah, it's like an N95.
If you just
Supreme.
Close your mouth real well, you could easily walk into like any store. No one would say
it. You can't even tell where my mouth is unless it's moving.
Oh, right. It's unbelievable.
It's so dark.
I've got a pretty good duster going on right now. I'm just gonna trim the sides down. But it's it's probably not even a duster. It's just straight up like industrial warehouse room.
You should bring back the Fu Manch at some point.
We have to do that.
You don't have to tell me twice. Oh. So
I mean, it doesn't take long. You sprinkle a little water on it, and it grows like a weed.
Yeah, I know. I wish I had that problem. Instead, I'm like patchy everywhere, you know?
I'll give you some if you want. I'll just save it in a Ziploc and glue it on.
I think we should talk about that one.
Which one? We're going to talk about that one a little bit. I gotta.
We're already kind of talking about fishing.
I know, but I'm going to get it back into the canyons, and then we're going to roll into that question.
Okay, that's fine.
Tell us about your first canyon trip ever. How old were you? What was the experience like? Were you one of those people that had the canyon cherry popped with like three big eyes, a blue marlin, a white marlin? Because I feel like that seems to be a pretty common story with a lot of
first trip you melee them, and then
I think for a lot of people the last 5 years it has been, because the canyons have been overall, they've been pretty damn good fishing overall the last few years. My first trip out was, let's say, 17, maybe 16, 17 in high school, with the family friends, you know, their family boat.
Yep.
23-foot sea craft. down to West Atlantis. And I remember, I think we might have had a white up, but we caught a bunch of yellow fins. The long fins were really thick then. We're pulling off those green machines, cedar plugs, Jap feathers. I mean, it was some old school stuff. Seven string, like Kona heads, Kona clones, really basic stuff. I mean, I look back and it's like, man, all the time and trouble and fanciness that I put into like rigging and preparing now, and it's God. I mean, it was just like throw out a green machine daisy chain and a cedar plug, maybe a white feather, and yeah, that was about it. I remember we were fishing all like Penn Senator 6-0s, you know, so real with like straight mono, Andy tournament green.
That's unreal.
All like Stewart roller guides, you know, reeling the fish in felt like an eternity because of that beautiful, like, 1.5 to 1 gear ratio.
Yeah, yeah.
Star drags.
That super high pitch clicker.
But it was definitely, like, magical, man. It had, like, the alert, A, being so far away from land. Not even thinking twice if we went that far in a 23-foot center console.
Yeah.
With a single outboard. But it was, like, the water, seeing, like, the flying fish, dolphins. You know, it was just, like, it was all the senses were going off. The smells, the sights, the sounds. You know, seeing a tuna fish, I mean, seeing a 40-pound yellowfin or 25-pound albacore was, like,
amazing.
I was blown away.
Yeah.
You know, like, quote-unquote exotics.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, we found this magical land of fishing in New England, like Narnia. Like, I walked into, like, Bill's Hall and came out into this paradise. And that kind of set it off a bit. And then I remember, I think I got out one or two more times before college. And then I went to work on the Francis fleet, my early years of college in the fall. So I got a big taste of overnight fishing in college on the headboats and the canyons, and that just further, you know, solidified it all. That was, and the bluefins, I remember that would always, I loved them. They were big and they were badass, but there was something about catching those warm water fish and something about going that far from land too.
Yeah.
It's like a vacation.
Oh yeah. Easily spend weeks out there.
Yeah.
Like, we can bring out, like, if you could, like, bring one of them, like, drill ships and just set it up as a mothership, game over.
That'd be savage.
It's such a
couple
amazing
slot machines, pool tables, be good.
So when are we getting the LLC?
Yeah, seriously, that sounds like a great great business plan. COVID19.com.
That's the name of the rig, COVID-19.
Wow, that's solid.
Yeah. Right?
There's going to have to be a waypoint this year. Somebody gets on something good or finds something good.
Call it COVID-19.
COVID-19, man.
I'm with you on that. They're going to name a place in the bank called COVID-19.
100%.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's gonna be like, what canyon you fish in, Wuhan? I mean, it's we're gonna have to have some fun with it.
We just doubled up to bats.
How's everyone doing? It's rough out there, back. Oh man, this water is really getting to them. We got three coming down with a kung flu over the side.
Kung flu.
Oh, I laughed so hard when I heard that for the first time.
I know. So good.
What do you got? Do you want to move into that question?
Yeah,
now?
I think it's a good question because we asked Damon the same question, and yeah. I think it's so interesting because he fished with Damon for years.
Yeah. So we know that's one of the places where you cut your teeth relatively, like, kind of the, I mean, you're a little older than us, but that's kind of when we all met, was when you were fishing with Damon a lot and,
mm-hmm.
you know, running charters here, and that's how that all kind of came to fruition.
Actually, but, before we ask this, why don't we talk about the boats that he's fished on and and each program, like, for each boat, you know, growing up.
So growing up, I mean,
boat one, 23 foot.
Yeah. a little bit earlier in high school, I worked for this company, Ryan Marine, out of or R&R Marine, they were called at the time. They were in Woods Hole. Did a 35 JC, inshore charters, occasional shark charter. You know, I jump on when I was still working at Eastman's a lot too, through middle school and high school, the tackle shop in Falmouth. So I'd jump on with Hairball sometimes if I had days off or he needed help. I fished with CJ Lambert a little bit on his boat before he had the Islander. He had the CK2. It was a 27 JC. And then there was the headboat, Francis Fleet, in college. Then the first kind of private boat, I moved to Florida and just kind of bounced around with Kevin Glenn freelancing.
Yep.
And then I was on the Carinelli, which was a 45 Cabo, based in Falmouth in North Carolina. I did a lot of freelancing early on in those years, or to have, like, seasonal gigs, but there was that, and then Damon for about two and a half, probably three seasons almost, from the Castafari. Well, simultaneously, Mulberry Canyon was becoming more and more of a full-time thing. They had Mulberry Canyon over the years, usually for 6-7 months out of the season in the Northeast. Went to Isla Mujeres, Mexico on the Magic Lady. It was a 65 Viking enclosed bridge. 45 Cabo Perfect Timing. Ran a couple winners in the Bahamas. And then I'm trying to think where I was in Haruko. I joined Tyler on Haruko. Beginning the fall of 2014 through that winter of 2015. And fished with them a little bit in the summer while Mulberry Canyon enjoyed its last season. And then in that fall, joined Haruko full-time till January 2017 when I took over running the Blondie out of Miami Beach in New York. And then ran Blondie until this fall when the opportunity for El Diablo and to be based back home arose.
Nice. What hull is that again? What hull is El Diablo?
El Diablo is hull one of the new generation 68 Vikings.
Gotcha.
It's a 2018 68.
It's a pretty boat.
She is. It's been a really good boat. I've really, really enjoyed running it and getting to know it and fishing it. It's a awesome platform, awesome size. Vikings really done a great job with these newest generation hulls.
Yeah.
Definitely their best product yet.
Sick.
Hands down.
I fished on two of the 66s and they're sick. Pescaria and Kicking It, which I'm not sure where they're out of primarily.
Kicking It. I know Pescaria because
right?
Miles 66, runs it and a few other guys have run Pescaria.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're waiting. They're looking for a new boat right now.
Yeah, I think they're looking at Freeman's actually recently. They were just down there tooling around mm-hmm. and checking them out, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, they were here in Miami recently because I think it was Manny or whoever runs their Instagram page. Apparently, we were fishing right next to them the other day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't. There's quite a few Freeman's down here, but.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Small world.
Yeah, no,
New England community is never usually far from each other.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, let's ask him this question.
Yes.
Because I'm interested to see.
So you have $100 in your pocket.
Okay, I remember this question.
excluding Ballyhoo, excluding hooks and leaders and all that stuff, terminal tackle. What is a 5-rod spread that you feel confident in fishing the canyons that will catch everything?
$100.
$100.
5 rods. Okay.
And a couple of things too. Like, you might not pick this, but like if you want like little Mocraft hookers or something like that, I will consider it fair if you say like one to cut down on your cost a little bit. You know what I mean? Instead of like the pack or whatever else.
Yeah, we'll start at the shotgun. So if we're going to go 5-rod spread, that means we're going to have, 5 rods.
Keeping it simple.
I mean, tough for canyon fishing, but I can make this work. So we'll go
look
with
how
the shotgun.
Hard, look how hard, I can see your thoughts right now.
Smoke,
that's how hard
he is. Smoke coming out of his beard right now.
Well, I'm just trying to think. You're saying like, so we're doing multi-species spread, kind of like your catch-all spread with 5 rods.
You'd feel, you catch a bunch of different species you're confident in. Any, it could be lures that go over Ballyhoo, just not including the cost of a Ballyhoo.
All right, so we'll start with a center rigger, Carlson bird, ideally one of the wooden ones, the original Carlson bird.
Okay.
Yep. Do you see how serious his face was right there?
Yeah.
they swim so much differently than anything else. And then behind it, I'm gonna go with a Big Eye Rocket in the Mean Joe green color.
Ooh,
interesting. Interesting choice. So
I like that move.
Big Eye Rocket is probably what, $14 lure.
Yeah,
it's not $12 or $14 lure.
Like the braid Big Eye Rocket. Yeah,
the braid Big Eye Rocket. Got to be Mean Joe green.
Okay.
And what's a Carlson burn? I mean, a wooden one, shit, you can't even put that. They're probably $100
yeah,
alone.
It used to be $20, so we're going to call it $20 right, just to help
we'll
you out.
Call it $20.
I got four, of them in my shed right now.
$34.
All right, we're at $34.
If you want one, John, he has a bunch of them for sale. What, you want $500 a piece?
$100 each.
You got any pink, and white ones?
I do, actually. I have all pink, all blue, all black, and I think an all green, and then I have a pink and white one.
See how serious Brian's face just got?
Dude, I'm a hoarder.
Pink and white.
Yeah.
That's right. A solid one.
All right, so you got Big Eye Rocket with a Carlson bird.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Let's go. We'll go.
So we're at $34. That's a combo.
Left long rigger. We're going to go with the Sea Witch. Hairball Sea Witch.
What color?
Purple and orange.
Purple and orange.
Little Dunkin' Donuts.
How
much do those cost?
$5.
$5. Turbo gave me some.
That's if he can find them now. Those are no longer sold retail.
Nick Candy's hoarding a lot of them in his basement. I'll tell you that much right now.
I've got the man himself making me about 4 dozen for this season.
Oh, that's sick.
Yeah, I mean, you could just say Sea Witch. I mean, because if we're talking for like something that's still accessible, really,
right.
So say a Sea Witch,
which is still under $5.
The only difference is the hair is like the hair material.
Is the hair
right?
Yeah, a little half ounce head with the hair.
Yeah.
If you got the hair, trim it out a bit so it's like you don't want a whole lot of hair. And I like purple and orange. That's left long, left short.
You had $60. $60.
I got $60 to go, okay? So let's go with an blue and white Marlin Magic Bird.
That's expensive.
No, are they? What are they, like, $60?
I don't know. You only got $100.
I'm calling that, like, 19, but somewhere between 19.
It's got to be $20.
It's got to be $20. Call it $20.
Right?
Or we'll just say a blue and white bird.
Okay.
So, I mean, I don't know how much those cost. Man, $100, that's hard. I spend a lot of money. Islander Tracker, Daisy Chain behind it.
Okay.
You want to go with knockoff Islanders to cheapen down the price?
Sure. Yeah, you can do the Carolina Gentlemen's, whatever they are.
Okay.
We're going to call that $30.
For the whole rig, $30?
That's probably on the cheap end, too.
Okay. I mean, they don't have to be Islanders, but that style, like a little chrome head, blue and white skirt, hair skirt, ballyhoo on the stinger. Now we'll slide over to right short. I guess we're just not going to pull flat lines. Right short, we'll go with a Green Machine type bar of some sort.
Dude, effing way you're affording this.
you're gonna have to sell your body to get this.
You get the China baits.
Okay.
You get them for like 30. You can get the whole bar for $20.
All right, we'll give it
we're
to
gonna,
you.
We're going to do an 18-inch wide bar.
No, you know what? We're giving it to him because you can go on Craigslist at any given moment in time and there's a Green Machine bar for like
a You can re-rig one.
Right.
Yeah, you can buy enough of the Green Machines, like knockoffs online. You'll probably buy 20 of them for under $20.
True. You're very true. Big question, though.
But you got to rig it yourself.
Are we talking 4 foot, 3 foot, or custom size bar?
3 foot, light wire, 3-drop.
Okay.
Oh, 3-drop. I like it.
I do, too.
You can hang them in the rigger and just splash them right down. They don't tangle.
Yeah, those are the best. Hold on, wait one sec. What did we say that cost, the Green Machine bar? We're saying $20.
$100?
$20 because he's our friend.
You can get those things so cheap.
All right, so dude, you're at nine. You got $10 left. You have we'll call it 11 for good luck.
Well, he's already at five rods, right?
Was that five?
Rods. Yeah.
No, that's four. No, that's 1, 2, 3, 4.
I still got the right long.
Oh, yeah, right long.
Or I could go with a flat line if I really wanted to.
I'm a big flat line guy. Big flat line.
I mean, yeah, I am too. But I mean, five rods. It's more of like.
I mean, you could throw a six rod in if you want, or a seventh rod if you can do it for under $100.
Yeah, naked ballyhoo with a flatline.
All right. Let's just...
What a dick.
let's just call that a given. That was a freebie. Right long. Yeah.
Right long will be another sea witch.
Wow.
You actually took me by surprise, dude.
I thought he was going to say Joe Shoots or something.
I was 100% sure there was going to be one of those in there.
So why the sea witch? Why do you like the sea witch? If you're going to choose a sea witch over a heavier head.
I really don't fish Joe Shoots in the canyons, Mike. I love the 3-ouncer for bluefins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But in the canyons, I'm a big fan of sea witches. I like, because it's, you don't need all that weight, you know, to make the bait swim properly. It's given enough flash, and it gives, you know, when an umbrella is back over it, it increases the body of the bait a little bit, but you're relying on the swimming action of the ballyhoo. And I think it's, with the less weight up front, I mean, most tunas usually engulf it pretty good, so you get a pretty good hook set. I just like to use as little weight as possible, keep things as streamlined as possible.
It's better for billfish, too. You know, if you have a billfish come up, you can at least try to pitch a fish.
Yeah, you can give it a chance. It's not going to affect, like, when you if you free spool it, it's not going to make the bait fall funny.
Right.
I just love the bait swim with it. I'm a big fan of chin weight and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm just a big fan of dead bait, period. I've just always liked sea witches, especially the hairball ones. They've served me really well over the years. But even a regular hair sea witch is killer. You just got to make sure you don't want too much hair on it. I mean, I like it pretty sparsely done, just enough to give a little extra color, a little extra body.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
That's how I prefer that's other
what,
things.
Is that what she said?
We had to get that one in there somewhere.
Just enough hair to catch your eye.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty good. That
I like
was pretty
that.
Good.
Because we're talking about something to catch everything.
Right. Mixed spread.
So, dolphins are going to hit anything. Wahoo's really going to hit anything. You know, the wahoo up north is, you know, you come, depending on time of year, you're really just there a bycatch. So we're really looking at yellowfin's big eyes, white marlin.
Yep.
You know, and if a blue one comes in, he's going to pile on whatever he chooses. The sea witches, you know, medium ballyhoo. I don't pull a lot of big stuff out there. A medium ballyhoo and a sea witch, a white may come up and you might not even have to pitch him. It's a small enough bait that he might just hang himself on it.
Yep.
The blue and white islander type chain with a bird in front of it run high in a rigger is, I mean, that's the moneymaker. That's a multi-species catch-all. And same with like a green machine style. Spread a bar. Whites are going to tangle themselves in it. Yellowfins have big eyes. It's long known as a tuna magnet.
Same color hook bait on your green machine bar or different color?
Same color. Same color. Only difference is I usually, if it doesn't already, I'll put like a pink tuna tail type skirt on the inside.
Yep.
Just to thicken up the body a little bit. And I might put a couple small egg sinkers in it just to keep that down a bit, especially if a bigger fish comes up, its head weight might push the hook bait out of the way.
Yep. Yeah. Same style.
I like that spread. I was fully expecting there was only going to be like one thing different from what we were talking about when we asked Damon.
Yeah.
But the sea witch
thing. I mean, there's probably, I bet you, if I recall, he probably had, a Carlson bird, probably a wooden one too.
Yep.
He probably changed his fishing style a bit since I was in the back of the boat, but I'm guessing his probably was a pink and white Sea Star golf ball from Islander off the back of the
Let's see if you can get it.
I bet you he had a money maker on one of the short riggers.
I don't think he had that because he thought it was too expensive.
Yeah, he did a
junior Islander, I think.
Yeah, he just, I think, said the Islander. I don't think he... Or an Islander chugger or something like that. I'm trying to find it.
He did do a Joe Shoot.
He definitely would have had a Molecraft chugger.
He did.
And a long rigger. And he's red. He likes like a watermelon color, like a green and pink or like a green and purple.
Yep.
I think we have it written down.
You actually
probably want a Joe shoot on a long rigger.
Yep. You've already nailed it. It was Moldcraft medium chugger, a Hawaiian Eye, and he only said a single Hawaiian Eye because he didn't have enough money to buy the money maker.
Yeah, you're a spread a bar and a money maker for $100. Yeah.
And then he said Sea Witch.
Hey, I just know how to shop around.
I guess so.
Old school Carlson Bird, golf ball. And he had the golf ball shoot, like, could be behind the Carlson
Bird. Either one.
Yeah. And he liked the three ounce shoots behind.
The 3 ounces, the original Joe shoots, the best head Joe's got, hands down. Those golf balls are killer bait too.
Oh, I love those.
They're a really nice bait. Yep. You run them on a flat line, a short rigger, anywhere, something.
Yep.
They're a great skirt.
Yeah, I feel like it's underrated. I feel like I don't see them that many places, and then you talk to people about them, and they all love them. You know.
Same with the old-fashioned Hawaiian Eye. I mean, nothing's caught probably more fish on the East Coast than a blue and white Islander with a ballygoon.
Yeah.
Especially blue marlins.
Yeah.
Hands down.
The first big eye I ever got was on a hybrid, John, blue and white golf ball on the shotgun at 12:30 in the afternoon.
I probably caught more big eye in the middle of the day than in the morning or evening.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if I believe the whole morning or evening thing.
It's definitely true. I mean, they are a nocturnal fish more than anything, just the way their eye structure is and where they live. But I've definitely caught more, and definitely bigger ones in the middle of the day than I have in the morning or evening. I mean, a couple good ones in, like, the dead of the night trolling or chunking. I've had some really good days, like between like 11 a.m. and like 3 p.m.
Right.
If I'm marking them and I'm hammering on them.
Yeah. Yeah, we had a couple. I had a trip on JC's where it was like that. Like everything was the middle of the day.
Last year it seemed like between 9 and like 11.
Yeah.
Depends where you are, too. They're very territorial fish. So it depends on, you know, one canyon, they may be acting completely differently than another canyon.
Yeah.
If you're able to pattern that area, you're going to just keep pounding it. You're going to consistently get on them.
Is there one canyon that you feel more confident in big eyes than other canyons?
I mean, if I tell you, I'd have to tell
you. I was waiting for that. You can be very general. You don't have to tell us where.
No, I mean, I've had good luck in West Atlantis over the years. Hydrographers.
Why do you think West Atlantis holds fish more than other canyons? Do you think it's because you just know the water better there, or the bait, or
a little bit of both?
You
know, it's because it doesn't, when you look at a chart, it doesn't jump out at you like, you know, Atlantis or Fishtails or Hydro or Lydonia, you know, even like Hudson, that have, like, you know, all this relief when you look at, like, where the canyon walls and edges are. But it's one of my most consistent canyons. I've just really had good luck there on a multitude of species. It's also easy to get to. It's the closest one to Falmouth. So that was always, you know, if the water was there, I'd go there because I was maximizing fishing time for my charters when I was chartering.
Right.
But Hydro is another real good one. You know, the stuff to the Far East is really good because it's got good structure, but it's also got, you know, the pressure starts going way down. But after running out of Montauk and, you know, fishing the dip, the Lobster Claw, Fishtails and Block and Hudson a bit, you know, there's a lot of really good structure out there. And it's, in fact, some of the baby canyons between the, like, the
major
bigger
one,
known
right.
canyons
yeah.
have some really good fishing within them, you know. And if you get some, especially with the charts these days, and if you get a really good like real bathymetric paper chart or even digital chart, and you really start looking at it, there's, I'm sure you have your West Atlantis, your Atlantis, Veach, Hydro, all the big named ones, but in between them all, you know, and on the edges that connect them, you know, going from one corner to another corner, you know, there's some really good little depressions and structure in there. When the water's on, you can find these baby canyons that are, you'll be all by yourself and just lighting the lamp.
I like it.
Hockey term.
Have you brought anything from from your travel? I mean, you've traveled a lot of places, fished a lot of places. Anything that you brought back into canyon fishing? Like, I can imagine you probably brought some of the muscle memory back from like Costa Rica into bill fishing and stuff over here to some extent.
Yeah, 100%. You know, dredges, teasers. I mean, that really, when I first kind of met Mexico, was my introduction to really to dredges. I remember that first season back, I immediately was like,
getting dredges.
Oh, we got to pull these things up here. Same with bridge teasers. I mean, even if, you know, to get a proper dredge set up going, whether on a big boat or a small boat, it's definitely a costly thing. I mean, if I would tell anybody that's just like, you know, a novice or intermediate going out there, I mean, just pull two squid chains off your riggers. It's not just for billfish. It's, I mean, we've had big eyes come up on them to where it's like basically pitching big eyes off of them using the flat lines. So definitely teaser fishing, you know, the circle hooks 100%, not just for billfish, but for everything. I mean, you can fish circle hooks just fine for your tunas, and you're not going to lose any less fish or more fish than pulling J hooks.
I think
that's a fallacy.
I agree. I had a really good trip with Miles last year on Pescaria, and you know, the yellowfin bite was savage out to the east. I mean, really everywhere, but
you guys got into those Alice.
Oh,
those
dude, big it was ones. Savage. But we put the billfish, I mean, put like a mixed marlin spread out and circle hooks on the flat lines, and we were catching all size range yellowfin, like perfectly pinned in the corner, like no short strikes, nothing. Like obviously fishing a little lighter drag at the hookup, but it was just as effective. Like
one of the biggest things I'd say from in regards to my progression of my preferred style, I guess you could say, the stuff that I've learned from other places, you know, other captains and mates and crews, is from when I started fishing up north and fishing the canyons to now, is the weight of tackle that I use.
The weight of the tackle?
Yeah, I mean, less than good. For big blue marlins, nothing more than a 50 in the canyons is all you need. 80s, I think, are overkill. Like 70s are overkill. I've pulled 20s, 30s, and 50s.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, you can occasionally you're going to get caught, you know, with a knife in a gunfight, but that's part of fishing and fun. You know, if you can best a fish on light gear, you know, maybe it can take you longer, but the sense of accomplishment at the end is good.
Spooling them all
appropriately. Like a lot of 30s and 50s.
You're spooling stuff all appropriately, though. Like, it's all back to, like, hollow core, the whole nine. Like, really maximizing.
No, not necessarily.
Small stuff.
I'm not worried about capacity. I mean,
yeah.
If I need more than 500, 600 yards to catch a fish, then I've lost control of the fish.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, at 50, I run 50 pound on 50s, maybe 60. I like 30 on 30s, 25 on 20s, or 25 on the 30s. You know, and I'll put the braid backing on a lot of stuff, not so much for the capacity. I mean, I don't stuff it with braid. It's more for the traditional sense of backing that it's less mono top shot that you have to replace. And you get 4 years out of it, 5 years out of it, if you take care of it with constantly, you know, backing it off, flipping it. I just like fishing the lighter stuff. I think you beat more fish with lighter drag than heavier drag in most situations. Obviously, big fish fishing, like bluefins, obviously, you know, the heavier drag with those larger fish on 130s. But big eyes, yellowfins, white marlins, even some bluefins. I mean, give me, if I was going to be setting somebody's boat up with one set of a do-all set, it'd be some 50s with 50 or 60 pound mono top shots and 17, 18 pounds of drag at strike and send them on their way.
Yeah.
I definitely realized that you can do the line is a lot stronger over the years. I've learned the line is a lot stronger than you think it is. And you don't need as much drag as you think you do to beat a fish or to set a hook.
Yeah. Yeah. I see.
And sometimes
I see kind of both sides of the fence there. Like, from a charter perspective, I think we go a little heavier on stuff just because of the longevity. But when you're when you're able to, like, you know, if you have a little bit of time in between trips and you're, you know, going place to place and have more prep time, I think it's...
When you're charter fishing too, you also, I'd have a wide range. As you guys know, you get a wide range of angling abilities too.
Exactly.
So you definitely, you know, going on the heavier side of things is kind of like a fail safe.
Yeah.
When you're dealing with, you know, different levels of inexperience.
Yeah. I think it, talking about this is important for people that are, you know, might not be super experienced at this point and stuff. It's like, you really got to know your crew and match it up to your tackle too. Like, right. What's your experience level?
I think need to understand too is, like, the chances of you getting spooled is so slim.
Yeah.
So slim. You know, even if you're gone, even if you're straight mono on a 50 and it's 50 or 60 pound line, even 80, the likelihood of you getting spooled is very unlikely.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You know, as long as you get everything cleared and you got proper drag, your connections are good, and you'll slowly start gaining line back. Just, you know, I think a lot of people, not just up here, but in general, and I definitely, but out being more inexperienced when younger, you know, I'd see a spool getting dumped, and that's like your first thought. That,
yeah, more drag, oh, shit, more drag. Like, right.
Yeah, or
stuff
like
breaks.
You know, and then there's not realizing that you don't need more drag because as that line gets into the water, you know, forget about the diameter left on the spool. You got that belly aligned in the water that's creating a pretty significant amount of drag too and pressure on the hook.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it's, and as people progress, I think as you go lighter, everything becomes a bit more fun. It becomes more sporting again. You know, it's not all out there meat mongering.
Taylor was catching schoolies on his 4-pound shad rig the other day.
Yeah. That's awesome.
It was a blast. It actually was awesome. Really fun. Corey had a 2-pound test.
Yeah.
It was a trout setup.
I knew
white tackle makes you a better angler.
Oh, the circle hook was the size of his reel.
Yeah.
Legit.
Should go out to the canyons and bring like little kids' rods and see who can land the biggest fish on like a Zebco 33 or like
a blast.
You know, a Snoopy rod.
Yeah,
hey, I mean, you're gonna get spooled then, but
just get ice fishing setups with the two guides and the zip tie your reel on there.
Yeah, leave that X zip tie that keeps the reel from Walmart. On there.
How many yards of a 0.5 pound braid could you get onto one of those?
Oh heck, 50.
You'd perfect.
Probably get 50. I wonder pound, what 50 pound yards test is one pound test.
Like regular dental.
I don't know.
Saying save some doll hairs, you know?
Oh, John left us.
No, I'm just turning a light on.
Okay.
Your beard.
What other good questions can we ask you?
Your beard was starting to really take shape of a mask in the dark. I'm not going to lie.
Here's a question. What's the scariest thing that's happened to you offshore?
Probably last summer. We were out fishing in beach, during the tri-state, having a killer day, killer 2 days. We probably already had 13, 14 yellowfins in the box. We might've had a whitey or two released, morning of day two. We had fish pulled out on deck. While still trolling, we were just kind of repacking the fish box to make some better space, get fish ice better. And amongst the madness of the fish going nuts, they'd blown out, you know, kind of blown out the gas shocks on the deck hatches. And if you've been on like the Vikings, you know that they're awfully heavy, especially with the teak decking over them.
I know.
This goes. And it was pretty, you know, things are going good. We're getting bites. And while we're repacking, one of the guys, barefoot, and we're all guilty of being barefoot at any given time, but shoes, close toe shoes are definitely a must in the back of a boat, but fish, hooks, knives, a lot of other things like deck hatches. and one of the hatches slipped and it went down and his toes were hanging over the gutter and it shot across his feet. And we very, very quickly realized once looking at it that we had pretty much a severance of one, if not several of his toes. About 120 miles from New York. So, you know, we got a good look at it and realized quickly that his left big toe was literally hanging on by skin. It was pretty gruesome. His other toes looked, they're better attached, but they were still pretty significantly lacerated. That was probably the scariest, you know, basically seeing an appendage severed.
Ugh.
So and having to make that phone call to the Coast Guard, and especially doing it over 16 in a tournament like Tri-State, where you know a lot of friends in the area, and you know, I think very quickly everyone's attention turned to 16 and 22 Alpha to listen to all the good stuff. But it was he ended up saving the toe. It was an eighth of an inch of bone kept allowed him to keep his big toe. Ended up having two rods drove through it to keep it on, to allow it to heal. That's probably the scariest. But it's some big weather, but never to where I truly felt like
you weren't well-being
was
right,
well-being was threatened.
Did he get airlifted off the out of the boat, or did you make it back, or what?
No, we made it back. They had the air wing in Coast Guard Group Woods Hole in Southeast Sector. That's who we spoke to first because we were in Veach. So every like 30, 40 minutes, had to get on the radio and speak to the flight surgeon and just give him an update on him, you know, vitals, if he was going into shock or not, blood loss. So they definitely, I think they definitely had a wing ready to roll if needed. But it was so flat calm, and he was definitely, you know, very stabilized. He wasn't critical at all. I mean, I went down at one point to check on him, and the guys on board had made him a chicken parm sub, which was amazing because he was eating chicken parm, and I reminded him that his toe looked like chicken parm. but it was flat calm, so we were able, you know, it was a 76-foot Viking, so we had her rolling pretty good. I mean, there's definitely a lot of dinosaurs getting burned through her. And we got back to Montauk, and they had the EMS crews there waiting to transport him to a local hospital, and then eventually a couple days later, he went to a surgeon in New York City. Or it was that was probably the scariest, you know. Ugh. The whole time thinking, like, what if he goes into shock? Like, if the toe is actually, like, what if it does, like, fall off while we're underway? Like, or put it in a baggie and Ziploc it, you know, shake some brine salt on it. Like, how do we keep this thing fresh?
Do we poop it?
You put it in the bait tray.
But, you know, it's definitely one of those situations where it's, you know, Brian, you're an emergency management person. You guys both went to Maritime. You know, we all go through this training for traumatic situations like that. You know, even like how to use a radio call. Like, you know, I went through like the whole FCC radio operator's license. I'm sure you guys may probably did that at the Maritime, maybe. And it's pretty wild, like, it being like, all right, this is not a dress rehearsal.
Yeah.
Like, this is real right now. And just thinking, like, what if that was, like, the top of his hand? You know, there's a whole... It starts making you think of so many other different situations that it could have been, like, a knife, you know, a fish bite. You know, I know the Lavals have a great story from years back down in North Carolina with Oahu.
Yep.
I think I was with Stanley, right?
Stu.
It was with Stu.
Yeah. You know, so that was like, you know, your adrenaline's going, so it's like calm on the surface, but like paddling like the Dickens on in the water like a duck, you know, look fine up top. Yeah, that was probably the scariest. You know, thankfully I haven't had anything to where it's, you know, involved having to use like an AED or anything more significant. It's truly life or death. I mean, it was essentially a big toe, but it was still pretty scary and gruesome to look at. That's yikes. For sure.
I mean, the importance of training though, you know, and not just telling people where stuff is or what to do, but like actually making them touch, see, you know, that stuff. Mm-hmm. It's the only way to like really build muscle memory on stuff. And
I just recently did, for El Diablo, incredible first aid trauma response kits, from this company D-Day Response.
Yep.
Down here in Florida, the founder and a lot of the staff are all combat medics with the Green Berets and other SOF forces. And then I did their full day training. You know, I'd done the Red Cross,
yep,
first aid, CPR, and that was good. But this training that I did with them was hands down the best. It was, I mean, not just the CPR, but we went through how to, like, dealing with, like, punctured lungs or collapsed lungs and reinflating the thoracic cavity. Stapling, which stapled myself. It's, surgical staples actually don't hurt that much. You know, using needles to administer liquid antibiotics, sutures, I mean, all sorts of stuff. It was the best $300 I've ever spent. I'd probably do it every single year.
Yeah.
Just to keep it that fresh. Like, I mean, it's something like owners of boats, captains, crews, you know, consistent guests on boats should all do it. And they teach you with the kits that they sell as well. And like the kit we bought for the Diablo, an AED, we got liquid IV antibiotics, you know, pure oxygen tanks, you know, Cat 5 tourniquets. I mean, you name it, stuff that like firemen, EMS, police, you know, stuff that they carry, like the real deal that you have, everything is top notch, ready to go. And, you know, and last year we had a similar kit on the boat for that situation, which definitely, you know, it's proper preparation prevents poor performance. Mm-hmm. If you have all the right tools, you know, a really bad situation can be controlled.
Yeah, no, it's true. Stop.
So wear shoes on deck.
Yeah. Coming from the guy that doesn't like to wear shoes. But you're not on deck. You're not on deck.
Even when I'm guilty at times, like coming out of the salon, I still like to get on the deck though. I get jealous of everyone having the fun down there. You know, I'm guilty of coming out of the salon, like not putting my shoes back on, in a pinch. But I definitely, these days, even before then, but definitely more so since, I try to always be conscious that I'm wearing shoes, not just for those situations, but walking around on deck, you know, when everything's wet, whether it's non-skid or teak, and you're barefoot, it's slippery, and one slip can, you know, your toes can catch on a ladder, catch on a cleat, you fall overboard. I mean, there's so many different ways to have a pretty significant injury on a boat, especially when it's underway.
We hooked a blue shark on the kite on Al Dente probably like 7-8 years ago, and fighting the fish. Fish comes up port side, like, coming up past midship, like, oh, we're gonna have to get off the ball. Nick drops the painter, and then the leader broke, and he ran up to try to catch the piece of poly before it went out of the bow chalk, and he slipped, and he put the whole chalk right through the palm of his hand.
Ooh.
Ooh. With like his entire body weight, like caught, like what he caught, and he's not a small guy either. You know, 200 pounds.
I can only imagine what he was saying
out
loud.
Dude, he was...
Was this Nick the owner?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'll never forget that ever. Yeah, just like... And it's one of those sharp ones.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
you know,
like
claw one that...
the claw one offset. It was right through the middle of his palm.
Oh, like the little Haas chop.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
A bad one is when you're on the dock and you walk under a cleat.
Yeah.
Have you done that one?
Oh,
that one's the worst.
And it always gets the pinky toe.
Always. You walk right under a cleat. Guy. You got to do that step. You don't realize it until it's too late.
I think one of the sabiki hooks are another one, too.
Oh, yeah.
That always, like, you know, when you get one barbed in there, it's just like, oh, this sucks. I got one under my fingernail.
Oh, God.
Oh, man. I'd rather 1,000 paper cuts than deal with being able to look and see the little gold thing curved underneath. It's like great. Like not only is it in like the most sensitive area of my hand, but it's barbed in underneath. Like, how do I get this out?
Yikes!
How did you get it out? You just grin and bear it, or what?
Yeah.
I take hooks out like it's a fish.
Yeah.
Use the. I mean, if it's just in skin, I'll do the line trick around the shank.
Yeah.
But this was like in sideways, like I could see the whole shape of the hook underneath. And it was in enough that it was like, I'm definitely not going to pull that out because I will probably cry and maybe piss my pants in pain. So we tried to work it out the closest we could and then used a razor blade to carefully like cut that section of the nail out so that we could pull off. And still, I mean, it was, that thing hurt for days.
That's your training at work right there. Training at work.
Yeah.
You know?
That's like, I'm wearing gloves dealing with those little gold catch-alls. Oh, yeah.
Dude, I was on a river trip last year and I was getting a little animated with like my morning story, like going to our spot, whatever, sun was rising, talking to clients, and I had two sabiki rods in the leaning post rod holders, like very close behind me, and I was like waving my hands around telling a story like my dad, and the rod was right here, all of a sudden just yeah, like just my hand was double impaled on the sabiki rig. Now I'm like sitting there with the charter, like asking him to drive the boat while I'm like unhooking myself, like wrapped up behind me.
It's funny like as I remember the first time I hooked myself as a kid, I remember feeling like sick to my stomach, like, oh boy, like, why am I sweating so much? Like, I'm feeling a little dizzy. And now it's like, as you get old, now when we hook ourselves, it's more like, God
damn it. Again?
Like, ugh. And then you're looking at it and you're like, I can get it out. And then there's other ones where you're like, fuck, I got to go to the hospital.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't had a hospital one yet. You're just like,
you know what? I'm gonna do more damage taking this out.
Yeah.
Then it's already done going in.
My dad had a guy get like a red and white Rapala treble hook, like double hooked in his hand. So this was like when he was like our age, probably.
Pretty much, yeah.
And he went to try to cut the hooks off or like cut
First, he had the red and white Rapala in his hand with a bluefish shaking on the other side.
Shaking all over the place.
And then he went to cut it off with a pair of pliers, cut one of the hooks off with a pair of pliers.
Double-handed.
The pliers broke, and he ended up breaking the guy's thumb. and it took them like 10 minutes in the ED to like get the hooks out of his hand, and like he had to get like a rod put through his thumb and like surgery.
I can see your dad with like the mark
ripping a butt. Oh yeah,
coffee and just looking at him, being like, "That didn't work." It's so calm and matter of fact.
Oh yeah,
being like, "You want to keep fishing?"
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of stories, what's some good fish stories you could tell us? What's like an epic catch that you can remember, or a battle, or maybe a heartbreaking story?
Heartbreaks are meaningful, you know.
Yeah, everyone's got always more heartbreaks than success stories. I have a couple big bluefin battles over the last few years, 4 or 5 hour battles that chafed off right at the very end. That were definitely, you know, all nice fish, all probably 900 class.
Yeah.
Yuck.
And then those are the ones that haunt you. Couple big blue marlin battles in the canyons lost for happy endings. Had some killer nights with some big eyes. You know, Pox and I had a lot of really, really solid years on Mulberry Canyon together catching those things. So we had a few nights. We had like 13, 14 big eye bites trolling. It was pretty incredible watching it, and just no space on the deck of a 40 Cabo because we've already filled the boxes and got more fish on deck, and we're still... Charters don't even want to reel them in anymore. We're still going.
That's sick.
On Haruko with Tyler down in Costa Rica, we had a really epic week in, this would have been probably spring of 2016, March 2016. The sailfish were just, it was firing off. Everybody was having huge days, and we ended up having one day where we caught 80.
That's
pretty wild.
That's insane.
I think we had like 110 or 115 bites or something. It was stupid. We must have gone through between short bites, washouts. I think we went through 150 ballyhoos just on hook baits. That was a pretty incredible day that forever stands out. We had some really good wahoo days in the Bahamas over the years. You know, the winter fishery there is pretty awesome. You know, you can go out in the morning and you might catch 10 or 15 of them, all decent ones, you know, 30 to 60. trying to think what else.
You ever chummed yellowfin out there and done that whole game in the Bahamas?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in Harbor Island, usually live chum them. We're using sandy key sardines that we get over there. If you're on the edge, you just kind of keep drifting the edge until you mark them or see them popping. Otherwise, you can drive around and chase the birds. And once you get up on them, you just start shoveling. One guy's shoveling netfuls of chummers over the side, and others are just putting out fly lines, and then, you know, one or two deep rods, just everything right off the rod tip. And when it hits right and they start popping off, it's just, you know, everything, all the rods are zinging out.
That's sick.
And they you never know what size you're going to get, but most are anywhere from like 30 to maybe 80. But then occasionally you get into some of the deeper water schools under the real big bird piles that are like 80, 100, 110 pound fish. There's been some big ones down out front of here in Florida the last few weeks. You know, a few people that have caught some 120, 125 pound class yellowfins. Wow. On the kite baits.
That's a nice surprise.
On 20 pound gear.
It's a nice workout. It's been a few bluefins around too. So like some people reported like 400 or 500 pounders crashing on their sail baits.
No way, really? Baits.
Can't think of what else. One guy was high speeding out to the swordfish grounds here the other day. My friend Freddie, who's been mating for us, and they caught a 150 pound big eye off Miami here.
That's sick.
Going how fast? 14, 15 knots or higher?
12, 13 knots, you know, steaming out to the swordfish grounds. Back on, probably one of my best canyon stories would be like that. There was that incredible fishtails bite about, I want to say now it's like 6 years ago, maybe?
Yeah, yeah. We went
longer.
On that too.
Yeah, I was sick.
And Mike and I had one night where we had a really good longtime charter client who brought a good friend of his, this guy Al, and he was celebrating his 85th birthday on an overnighter in fishtails. And it was just Mikey, myself, our client Mike, and Al. And Al was, you know, of the greatest generation, and he did not sleep a wink. I don't think he went to the bathroom once. Crushed Bud Heavies, and at 85 years old, he caught two or three big eyes, all over 200.
Oh my God.
The dude was just, it just stuck out because, A, it was his birthday, but it was like kind of like hanging with that grandfather type. But this dude was just so hardy and had so many incredible stories and just a great attitude, and topped that off with, like, you know, that incredible big eye. But I forget how many elephants we killed that night, but we had quite a few nice big eyes too. And that was a pretty wild scene, a dude that age cranking away on these fish. You know, that whole bite had, I think every trip was, you could call it epic trip or a great trip, you know, big yellowfin, lots of big eyes all on the night, everything feeding out of your hand. Trying to think of some other good trips.
I just remember pulling up to that fleet in 400 boats.
It was unbelievable.
It was outrageous.
Like two square miles.
Yeah. And everyone's got one on, on.
All night you just hear drag going out.
The fact that I don't think I heard about that anybody like collided.
I heard some like yelling and screaming, but I never saw like a collision. I'm sure it probably happened. I
mean, you're so close you didn't even have to yell and scream.
Right. You could talk.
You could, like, whispered. You could have whispered profanities at people. We had a great on Blondie a couple years ago in Hudson. We got into the white marlins real good. There was a really good white marlin bite going on there, and we raised 38. I think it was we saw 45 fish, but we raised 38 and had 34 bites down the Hudson, which was pretty awesome.
Wow.
We only had four of us on the boat total. 3, 4, 5, including me and the bridge. I mean, but we really only had 3 anglers. So our ratio wasn't the greatest, but it was awesome. It was everywhere around you, everyone was going backwards and or going into a turn with multiples. You know, there's you could call every trip has its, for the most part, has its highlights.
I agree.
I'd say, you know, some are forgettable because of heartbreaks, but, you know, any trip that's good definitely usually has a degree of awesomeness to it.
Right.
That, I mean, that wahoo in the middle of the morning,
That was hilarious.
Off Georgia was pretty good. And it turned out being a pretty good one, too.
Yeah. I wish I got to eat it.
You flew back. Was I supposed to mail it
2 days later? Like, I forgot it was in the fridge or the
I forgot it was in my stomach.
Yeah, pretty much. You probably ate the whole thing, but I did.
No,
have,
I forgot it was buried in ice, so I hadn't vacuumed.
I did have some sushi though. That was it. Was really good.
I love Wahoo. Wahoo's awesome.
No, that was hilarious.
So when are you heading? When are you scheduled to come back up and start the Nantucket program and fish
end of
up
June.
Here? End of June.
End of June. We'll do a quick yard period and then try to be up before July 1st, give or take right around there. And then we'll probably start fishing immediately. You know, try to really just focus on the canyons for July and August. Obviously, with bluefin if. You know, depending on what our schedules are. But then we'll fish July through October.
That's great.
I'm amped for the season.
It should be good. I think it can start a little later than it has the last several years. Those water temps are still looking pretty cold. Sure the bluefins won't care, but I think the canyons will be more of a July, mid-second week or so of July start. Unless something changes with the water temps.
I can't wait.
What do you guys know? You guys going to be fishing with Opportunity again this year?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure if they're doing tournaments. I'm not even sure if we're going to have tournaments. You know,
we're still planning on hosting the big game battle.
Yeah.
Okay. Awesome.
It's, you know, things are going to be a little different for this season, but right. We fully, all the committee people with them, you know, those folks who still fully intend on hosting it.
Our cousin's on the planning committee. Carly's our cousin.
Oh yeah, I've been speaking with Carly a bunch.
Yeah.
And then I think Tri-State still, depending on what Rhode Island ends up doing, but I think Carrie and Kyle still plan on hosting that. I'm not so sure about what Damon's planning or what Jonas is planning. But I still think you're going to see people are going to try to run tournaments as best they can.
Right. Yeah.
I think obviously
the festivities might be dialed down a little bit.
Yeah. It might be, you know, everyone just stays on their own boat and, you know,
everyone
quarantine.
Yeah. A little quarantine. I mean,
they should just all link up and just call it like the, you know, make it a series and call it the Corona Championship.
That would be unbelievable. I wonder if Corona would actually spend money on marketing for a tournament like that.
That'd be pretty solid.
Yeah. Oh.
Chinese food buffet for the awards banquet.
Jesus. Oh, I love it. I love it. Well, we've been talking for about an hour and a half, man. And this is flying by. This has been.
We could go all night long.
Oh, 100%. We could go all night long.
When are you guys going to start bluefin? Are you guys going to start right on June 1?
Probably not.
Yeah.
You know?
We've kind of learned our lesson over the years to not go out there and freeze our asses off.
If we start seeing them on the way, like, to and from ground fishing, we will. But if we are even doing... I mean, we're still in limbo. It's, like, insane. You know, we can't, no four-hire trips.
We're supposed to find out Monday what's going on, but
yeah.
I doubt
it. Yeah, I saw New York just... extended their stay at home till June 13th.
Yeah.
I heard they're opening up charters though, right?
Yeah, and beaches too. I guess Connecticut and New Jersey are all going to. Supposedly they're going to start opening beaches and the four hire fleet. Hopefully Massachusetts will follow. So you guys got the mackerels good? Any big ones?
Yeah.
Want a hydro gun and vacuum seal some for me?
These are primos for that. They might not even swim straight. They're so fat, dude.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Like
they look like baby blackfin.
Let's put it this way. He's using his shad rod for everything right now. We were catching mackerels on the shad grubs.
Dude, it was a blast. they were hauling ass, taking drag.
Shad, I mean, Big Mackerel, but I mean, shad alone are an undervalued fish.
100%. Yeah. Yeah.
They're like, I mean, that's like a Northeast, like river tarpon.
Right.
Have you ever caught a weak fish?
Yeah. I caught more when I was a kid. Bigger ones. These call them tide runners. Not many in recent years. They're delicious.
Are they?
Oh yeah.
I was watching.
They're incredible.
I was watching, I think it was like On the Water or something the other day, and they were actually targeting them. It looked pretty cool. It was like a trout.
It's a sea trout.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Giant very sea trout.
The type of sea trout. They're also called squatigue. That's the Native American name for them. Hmm. I know they're definitely been coming back a little bit on the south side of the Cape.
Dude, your nickname could be Squatigue
from now on. Squatigue. Holy.
That's a pretty good one.
That's why Taylor and I started laughing in the middle of your story.
We literally read each other's minds.
That'd be a great down east boat name.
Or you could just name your beard Squatigue.
It's like Chewbacca's long lost cousin.
I could just imagine being in the pit and yelling up to you, "Hey, Squatigue!
Hey, Squatigue!
Let out the teaser, Squatigue!
Skipper Squatigue!" So you can get them in the salt ponds on the south side of the Cape, guys. I know Larry Backman's targeted them off and on over the years and done pretty well.
That's cool.
They got super soft mouths, but I mean, if you get them, they're just like a speckled sea trout or a gray sea trout. They're delicious eating.
That's cool. I'd love to go down there. I mean, this is like the time, right? Like this time of year, early spring.
Yeah, now and then the big ones. Traditionally, when I was a kid, my uncles would target them in the fall when the big pogies were running.
Yeah,
and they'd usually, you know, the blues would be on top, the stripers would be underneath them, and if you got a bait all the way down the bottom, the weak fish are usually underneath them a little bit, the bigger ones.
Interesting.
I mean, Damon used to catch some real big ones as a kid. He's got some pictures. He's got some like 18, 19, 20 pounders.
Holy shit.
They get big.
Wow.
I had no idea.
Next time you see Damon, ask him about it. He's got a picture of one where he's going to be like 12 or so. And I mean, he's got it like this.
That's insane.
Yeah. They always called them tide runners. I don't know why. Recall that being what their nickname was.
Huh. Interesting. That's cool. Any more good stuff? Any good questions for Johnny Galvin?
I don't know. Anything else you want to talk about?
How about I know you're not super. Well, I don't want to speak super. For it. Well, you are super. You know, I think you're super. But how do people find you on Instagram, Facebook? Are you on that a lot, or just a little bit here and there?
I'm on Facebook. You know. So much. I mean, I have an account. Instagram would be Fishy Pants Magoo.
Oh yeah,
Fishy Pants Magoo.
How did that start? Yeah. I've always wondered how that started. Like, I understand you told me how Turbo started, and I have no idea how Fishy Pants Magoo started.
That goes back to high school. I used to do a lot of drawing and like sketching, and I took a cartooning class in high school. And we had to create this like comic strip, an original comic strip. So I created a comic strip about like a fisherman where nothing ever went his way, or, you know, he's definitely like a protagonist, but always had like nothing was ever easy for him. And I titled it The Misadventures of Fishy Pants Magoo. And then forward on into college and, you know, AOL Instant Messenger and all that came around. It's like, create a screen name. Okay. Well, Fishy Pants Magoo. And then everyone in college, like when they figured that one out, it just took off. You know, some people called me Fishy Pants. Others said Magoo. Some just said Fishy. And it just became one of those things. So like, if I needed to make like a username or a screen name for something, I just went with Fishy Pants Magoo.
Wow.
And I mean, it's transpired into now, like my friends' kids call me Uncle Fish. I mean, it's. And I think Magoo, kind of the fishing industry, took on, you know, up north there between like Damon, JC, Eric Stewart. You know, they kind of jumped on the Magoo thing. And I guess my cartoon character slowly over the course of years came to life in some sense. I think I've been fortunate to have some better fortune than he did on the comic strip pages. But it goes all the way back to high school.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome.
I still have all the comic strips, too, somewhere.
Oh, dude, you got to start posting that shit up. That's gold.
It's good. There's all sorts of drawings. I think I had to make the character out of clay too. There might even be a sculpture somewhere.
Dude, you got to
probably.
You got to get that to us.
I'd have to go ask the mother where she has probably one of those wonderful artifacts hidden.
Oh my god, dude, that's incredible. Absolutely incredible. Well, obviously we'll be talking to you soon, hopefully seeing you soon when you get up here, and maybe we'll get to fish together once you get up
for sure, man.
Have some time, you know?
Yeah.
We'll definitely do another one of these, maybe even a couple more this year.
Yeah.
Whenever you're on island, give a holler, or if you're in Falmouth, you know, I'm usually home a couple days a week.
Yeah, for sure. We have to catch up in a face-to-face manner, hopefully soon, you know?
I'm a little sad he didn't do any pikey.
I know.
Oh, Lottie, you're gonna be awfully fucking patient for that guy to come out.
Oh god, that dude.
Good things that come to those who wait. But if you're fucking impatient, you ain't getting shit.
I think we all need to get drunk one time and do an episode just straight up pikey.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I could just, you know, lose a cork to a rum bottle and see what happens.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Perfect.
Well, we really appreciate you coming on, shedding some knowledge on us and all the listeners, and I think this is going to be a good one. It'll get people fired up for the offshore season that'll hopefully be here before we know it, you know?
Yeah, man, I'm ready to get back up home, and you know, it's been 3 years since I got to fish based out of Mass Water, so I'm pretty excited to be back fishing in the backyard consistently.
You should anchor that thing up on the bank one of those days you're up there, you know?
I may sneak up there. Who knows? If the fishing's worthwhile, I'll come on up.
Oh, yeah.
Before all this COVID shit, we were talking about coming up a little earlier, like mid-June, and we were going to try to go fish out of Boston for a few days, you know, do the bank, and then go up and fish out of Gloucester and go out to Fippenese for an overnighter. Do a little halibut fishing, ground fishing.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'd love to get.
Maybe that. We'll still do that.
That'd be fun.
Keep me posted if it lights up in the bank. I'd love to come up there and show the bosses, you know, that style of bluefin.
If it's anything like it has been the last couple of years, it'll be a no brainer. Hopefully,
I'm not gonna, but I won't have to come up because I'll be driving over them all.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Well, thanks, buddy. I'm gonna end this on OG's three words of wisdom. Just remember, you can't catch them if you don't have a hook in the water. Always trust your instincts. And the last one, you'll just have to keep listening. Stay tight, everybody. Thanks, Johnny. I appreciate it, man.
Thanks, man. Have a good night, guys.
Yeah, we'll talk to you later. Thanks, buddy.
See ya.
Thank you guys for tuning in to this episode of the Seabros Fishing Podcast. We'd like to take a second to thank our sponsors again, Mass Bay Guides and Deep. If you're interested in booking a charter with us on the Mass Bay Guides boats, you can visit www.massbayguides.com for rates and availability. Call the office at 781-545-6516 to book a trip. If you're interested in how the season's going, what we're catching, how the bite's been, you can follow us on Instagram and on Facebook. Just search Mass Bay Guides, and all of our daily reports and everything will be there. We just want to thank you all for your input and feedback to a lot of our latest podcast episodes. We've got some great responses from our community. We're having a blast doing this. If you have any ideas on guests or topics or anything, we are all ears. We are more than happy to entertain any new ideas and see if we can get this thing to grow even more and touch on new things. So that would be greatly appreciated as well. If you want to contact us or, you know, reach out to us or just check out what we have going on at Seabros Fishing, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Seabros Fishing. You can also visit our personal pages on Instagram, MBG Brian and MBG Taylor. You can direct message us there. If you want to just shoot the breeze, talk fishing, you know, we're in the same boat as everyone else. So we can't wait to get going, can't wait to get going with the 2020 season here, and hopefully it all comes together despite everything that we're all going through currently. So with that said, thank you all very much for listening. Stay safe, stay healthy, and stay tight.